Chapter 2. The Lighthouse. Meanwhile, the oiler and the correspondent rowed. And they rowed. They sat together in the same seat and each rowed an oar. Then the oiler took both oars. Then the correspondent took both oars. Like that, they rowed and rowed. The tricky part was when the time came for the one resting in the stern to take his turn at the oars. It is easier to steal eggs from under a chicken than to change seats in a dinghy. First, the man in the stern slid his hand along the boat and moved with care. Then the man in the rowing seat slid his hand along the other side of the boat. It was all done with the most extraordinary care. As the two passed each other, the whole party kept watch on the coming waves, and the captain cried,
"Look out now! Steady there!"
The brown patches of seaweed that appeared from time to time were like islands. They were traveling, apparently, neither one way nor the other. They were, in general, stationary. The waves informed the men in the boat that they were making progress slowly toward the land. The captain said that he had seen the lighthouse at Mosquito Inlet, and the cook remarked that he had also seen it. The correspondent was at the oars then, and for some reason, he too wished to look at the lighthouse. But his back was toward the far shore, and the waves were too important for him to dismiss. For some time, he could not gain an opportunity to turn his head. But at last there came a wave gentler than the others, and when they were at the top of it, he swiftly looked over the western horizon.
"See it?" said the captain.
"No," said the correspondent slowly. "I didn't see anything."
"Look again," said the captain.
He pointed.
"It's exactly in that direction."
At the top of another wave, the correspondent did as he was told, and this time his eyes stopped on a small, still thing on the edge of the horizon. It was precisely like the point of a pin. It took an anxious eye to find a lighthouse so tiny.
"Think we'll make it, Captain?"
"If this wind holds and the boat doesn't swamp, we can't do much else," said the captain.
The little boat, lifted by each towering wave and splashed violently by the crests, made slow progress. She seemed just a tiny thing struggling along at the mercy of five oceans. Occasionally, a great spread of water, like white flames, would swallow her, and she would almost seem to start sinking.
"Bail her, cook," said the captain calmly.
"All right, Captain," said the cheerful cook.
It would be difficult to describe the quiet bond between the men that was established here on the seas. No one said that it was so. No one mentioned it. But it lived in the boat, and each man felt it warm him. They were a captain, an oiler, a cook, and a correspondent, and they were friends. The hurt captain, lying against the water jar in the bow, spoke always in a low voice and calmly, but he could never command a more ready and swiftly obedient crew than the unique three of the dinghy. It was more than a mere recognition of what was best for the common safety. There was surely a quality that was personal and from the heart. Beyond this devotion to the commander of the boat, there was their quiet bond. The correspondent, for instance, had been taught to be cynical of men. Yet he knew, even at this time, that it was the best experience of his life. But no one mentioned it.
"I wish we had a sail," remarked the captain. "We might try my coat on the end of an oar and give you two boys a chance to rest."
So the cook and the correspondent held the mast and spread open the coat. The oiler steered, and the little boat made good way with her new setup. Sometimes the oiler had to turn sharply to keep the sea from breaking into the boat, but otherwise sailing was a success. Meanwhile, the lighthouse had been slowly growing larger. It had now almost assumed color and appeared like a little gray shadow on the sky. The man at the oars turned his head often to try to catch a look at this little gray shadow. At last, from the top of each wave, the men in the boat could see land. It certainly was thinner than paper.
"We must be near New Smyrna," said the cook,
who had gone past this shore often.
Captain, by the way, I believe they abandoned that life-saving station there about a year ago.
Did they? Said the captain.
The wind slowly died away. The cook and the correspondent no longer had to use all their strength to hold the oar. But the waves continued their assault on the dinghy, and the little craft struggled over them. The oiler and then, by turn, the correspondent took the oars again. If men could only train for shipwrecks and have them occur when the men had reached peak condition, there would be less drowning at sea. Of the four in the dinghy, none had really slept the previous 2 days or 2 nights before coming on to the dinghy. And in the excitement of running around a sinking ship, they had also forgotten to eat much. For these reasons, and for others, neither the oiler nor the correspondent liked rowing at this time. The correspondent wondered how there could be people who thought it amusing to row a boat. It was not an amusement, it was a punishment. It was nothing but a horror to the muscles and a crime against the back.
"Take her easy now, boys," said the captain. "Don't tire yourselves. If there's a surf, you'll need all your strength, because we'll sure have to swim for shore. Take your time."